Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The Bush Foundation announced today 24 visionary leaders selected as the 2019 Bush Fellows. Today we meet the South Dakota Bush Fellows. Sarah Pierce is Oglala Lakota, and she wants Rapid City to become the model of a culturally responsive city. She's making a connection with educational opportunities in Hawaii in order to do so, and she is joining us today from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in SDPB's downtown Rapid City studio. Sarah Pierce, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Hello. Thank you for having me today. It's an honor to be here with you.
Michaela Sieber wants South Dakota to be a more welcoming, supportive place for LGBTQ people. As a member of the Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate, she knows firsthand the challenges of finding acceptance and gay role models in both her white and Native communities. Michaela is with us from the Kirby Family Studio in SDPB's Sioux Falls studio. Michaela, welcome.
Hello.
First of all, congratulations to both of you, because this is a big announcement and a pretty big deal. So, Sarah, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Michaela, congrats.
Yes, thank you so much.
How long, I want to go back to when you first sort of have the sense of the Bush Fellowship and what it is, your early exposure to it. And let's start with you, Michaela. When did you sort of know that the Bush Foundation existed and that there were these opportunities for, you know, professional and personal development?
Yep. I've probably known about them for a couple of years. And I thought about applying for this fellowship last year for their 2018 program, but I didn't feel I was ready yet. And after just talking with some people from Bush, some of my colleagues who have had grants from Bush, I kind of got a feel for what they were and what they could do for me. And that's when I decided this was something I could do for this year.
And Sarah, how about you?
I would like to echo what Michaela said. I've known about the Bush Fellowship for quite some time. But having just returned to South Dakota after a brief professional stint in Nebraska, I wasn't prepared last year to apply, but then in networking with Bush Fellowship alumni, felt that this year was the perfect time to apply.
The alumni, that's quite an quite a group of people, really. Sarah, tell me a little bit about how the Bush Foundation sort of connects those people, because they've been doing this work for quite some time in this region, Minnesota and the Dakotas. What are the opportunities for kind of plugging in to this greater cohort of leaders?
Well, the amazing thing about the leadership alumni with whom I'm familiar with is they represent a broad range of cross-sector leadership within Rapid City and beyond. So it's really great to network with them. But aside from the fellows, there are a lot of great initiatives that Bush has going in Rapid City and in our tri-state region that have been really instrumental in some of the changes we're making here in Rapid City. One of the initial glimpses into some of that work was my collaboration and involvement in MOA, or Minnehaha'an Ohkola K'iche'api Ambassadors here in Rapid City. In bridging racial relations here, I had the opportunity to meet several of those Bush Fellowship alum, as well as a variety of grantees under several other Bush initiatives.
And let's explore that a little bit, because you've been on this program before talking about MOA ambassadors, and we've spoke with them many times. And one of you want Rapid City to become the model of a culturally responsive city. Tell us, how do you explain to people what that means?
So when in thinking about the application, a lot of what I envision for Rapid City stems from the Maori people in New Zealand. And the concept of cultural safety actually comes directly from the freedom of being despite cultural differences and things that make us different from each other and diverse. But I just want to look into an extension of what MOA is doing and really capitalize off of that within the school system, but then hopefully transcend beyond the confines of our system to affect and encourage cross sectors to become more culturally inclusive and diverse.
Michaela Sieber, tell us a little bit about the application process to become a fellow, because there's a lot that's involved in it, but it's also helps you sort of clarify what exactly it is that you want to do next.
Yeah.
Tell us a little more about that.
Sure.
Please.
So I started this process back actually last June. I started writing responses to the questions, and the applications are due in August. So this has been like a 9-month thing that all the fellows have gone through, and we've been through multiple stages of questions, and they just ask you to really look at yourself and your leadership. And it was an amazing process, actually, to kind of look at why you wanted to be a leader, what you had already that makes you a leader, and your wildest dreams for your community. That's the one of the great things about the Bush Fellowship, is there's this flexibility that they give you with resources and funding to really dream big and go for whatever you want to do in your community and how you see it fit. So it was just a great process for me. And honestly, after the interview, I thought I would be okay even if I didn't get it, because it was just such a wonderful day with people, talking to fellowship alumni, and the whole process was great, and getting feedback and just really confirmation that what I wanted to do was valuable and I could do it even without this fellowship. But this definitely makes it a lot easier and a lot more feasible, I think, for me.
Sarah mentioned this concept of cultural safety and diversity, and sort of celebrating that. And you're looking at South Dakota becoming a more welcoming, supportive place for LGBTQ community. That's not an easy thing either.
Mm-hmm. No.
Tell me where you sort of begin. What's the foundation mm-hmm. to sort of articulate to people what the situation is mm-hmm. right now in the state for sort of welcoming this community?
Yeah, and I had to do this like throughout the interviews, because a lot of the people I spoke to were from Minneapolis area, so maybe a little bit they didn't really understand the ruralness of South Dakota and the issues we were facing. So I think the first thing I want to learn is better communication, how to be an effective communicator and really connect with the people I'm talking to see how they can see themselves in LGBTQ people. This community has high health disparities, and we need to be more inclusive of them. For me, I think the first step is learning how to communicate effectively and educating people, because that's what I see the problem. A lot of the problems here are miseducation, undereducation on this community and the health disparities that they face.
One of the things we saw during this legislative session, as we listened to testimony about a variety of bills, was inaccuracies. Mm-hmm. Inaccuracies in language that was used, things where people were, you know, you could hear people really just trying to process mm-hmm. Something that that other people couldn't understand, why there was such a difference between two people's understanding mm-hmm. of who gay people are. Mm-hmm. Do you find that there's not only this gap in understanding, but that some of the information is just false?
Absolutely. That's one of the reasons I wanted to apply with this kind of unique spin on it, because there are those gaps and there's such misunderstandings, and it's so hard to get on this like common level where we're all understanding the same thing about this community. And I do see that. I am involved a lot in the legislative session with another group I'm in, and I'm out in peer and listening to testimony, and I tune in and I'm helping my friends run for office, and I'm hearing those same things with voters. And so I see that every day.
Sarah Pierce, you see similar things, don't you, where people will say, what do you mean culturally responsive city? Like, we already are, or that's, you know, we live in a post-racist society. Or talk a little bit about coming to terms with communicating what exactly is going on in a community.
Absolutely. I would just like to reiterate what Michaela just mentioned, and the importance of having great communication skills, especially around the critical conversations of the elephant in the room. especially in Western South Dakota, we're in an area that really hasn't discussed the absent narrative of assimilation and genocide that took place here. And we have to have those critical conversations, the tough, challenging topics, before we can move forward. But there's a way to do it in a way that doesn't evoke guilt or shame. It's a way to come to terms with the understanding, but also be progressive and constructive in the mindset for change. And I think that's one of the first steps that needs to happen here. And so part of my application was to look at communities that have done that successfully or are in the process of doing that in a way that's a few steps ahead of us here.
All right, talk to us about Hawaii and the connection between what we can learn from, you know, indigenous cultures in Hawaii and and sort of how those cultures have merged with non-natives and, you know, Asian American cultures and sort of the melting pot that is Hawaiian culture now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. In talking to a lot of my colleagues who have been there, specifically looking at their immersion schools, their language immersion schools, I have been become increasingly interested in how the public school, the general public school setting looks and how the integration of Polynesian culture, language, and history are deeply embedded into the school system, but not just at the burden of responsibility for the school system, but the communities at large. And so what is the community perception of this inclusive effort, and how does that affect the identity of Polynesian students and reinforce cultural norms within where, you know, the public school systems are doing this best?
So what are you hoping to do, Sarah? What's one of the first things that you're planning out now that you've been announced as a Bush Fellow?
So I've actually been talking with the National Indian Education Association about doing more work around policy, because that's where I'm the least versed, I would say, in my leadership. So acquiring skills around policy and affecting change that could happen both at the local, state, and national levels is really important to me. But then also in the fall, looking towards going to Hawaii to actually see firsthand all of that live in action, not just in the school setting, but with branches like social work and then community settings, and what is real community perceptions of all of this. And I hope to bring some of those tools and knowledge and resources back to the community here to affect some change.
Michaela, talk a little bit about policy. Are your goals in a policy area? Are your goals in a communication area? Elaborate on what sort of it's. And it's always hard, you know, because we always bring the Bush Fellows in at this point when they've just been, you know, announced. And we'd like to have you back, both of you, just that the invitation stands as things develop and the things that you have learned. Mm-hmm. But Michaela, I'm wondering if you're interested in leaning into this policy sort of avenue as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's a passion of mine and something I've been involved with peripherally for a while, and I will use this fellowship to build skills that would help me at that level one day, learning how to communicate with our policy leaders and present data in a way that's palatable to them and helps them see, connect the dots from this problem that they think we have or that we do have to a solution that actually fits the problem. I plan on going to a conference that's for LGBTQI leaders in Washington, D.C. In November or December, and it's put on by the Victory Institute, and they really help LGBTQ leaders step into that role in advocacy and help them learn skills for the communities that they serve. So that's one part that I want to focus on, but it's really a lot of different things for me.
How different is it in your Native community and the non-Native community as you cross both those worlds? What are you noticing?
Mm-hmm. There are similarities. I found a community here in Sioux Falls that I didn't have in Sisseton, unfortunately, growing up. But I do, it's a weird dynamic because I work in research too, and these questions come up also, and I've been asked that question a lot. And it's about the same. There's still some misunderstanding in both sides of my family about LGBTQ people, but I do see more acceptance from my Native family, honestly. And I think that just comes from some historical aspects when we look at gender roles and where Dakota people came from and how women and men portrayed themselves in our societal communities.
Talk a little bit about health disparities, because you mentioned that. And as a researcher, what are you seeing for health disparities in the LGBTQ community versus a cisgender community?
Yeah, everything is up in LGBTQ's community. So we see more rates of chronic diseases, alcohol misuse, substance use. Suicide attempts are much higher in this community, especially when we look at the trans piece. Mental health problems are up. LGBTQ people are less likely to have health insurance or access to care or even seek out that care if they have that because of miseducation by our healthcare providers.
Are there good stories? And I mean, obviously there's good stories and bad stories, but are you seeing, do you have access to the research that would indicate what needs to change to move that needle in the right direction?
Yeah, there's been work done around the country, really just not in a place like South Dakota, to look at those protective factors and what helps our LGBTQ community thrive. And so I do plan on looking at more of those factors, attending some LGBTQ health research conferences and seeing the work that's being done around the area, and hopefully being able to conduct my own project here in Sioux Falls one day. That would help us get the data and see what our protective factors are that are already present that we just don't see.
Sarah, let's talk about thriving a little bit and look into the future. What are you optimistic about, not only through this Bush Fellowship and the work that you might do, but in sort of molding or being part of this ongoing conversation to help create a more culturally responsive city in Rapid City?
Absolutely. I'm actually looking forward to deepening the existing collaboration with a lot of champions in this work here in Rapid City. We have a great group of dynamic cross-sector leadership who has been doing this work diligently. I always mention that I really stand on the shoulders of my predecessors because they've really laid a solid framework for this work to start happening, especially in Rapid City. So it's really exciting that this opportunity will allow me to network and increase that collaboration that needs to happen to promote this work more diligently.
And Sarah, you mentioned this notion of an absent narrative, and this seems to me, and you can correct me or point me in a different direction, but this is one of the biggest challenges, is that a lot of people feel like talking about genocide, talking about colonization, talking about treaties is a step into the past that doesn't need to be taken. There's this notion of, hey, you know, let's move forward, get over it. Do you see that as one of the main things that needs to be addressed is not only what we talk about and things that we don't understand, but really having the conversation at all?
Yes, I think the historical trauma is definitely a piece that prevents us from moving forward. When we think about the past, we do need to acknowledge it first to be able to start healing from the wounds of the past. But then we also have to remember, especially in Rapid City, most of us are generational descendants of survivors who have been in Rapid, either fighting for their inherent connection to remain on this land, or we're descendants of people who have came westward for opportunities for future generations. And so we each of our narratives from our own perspective seems like the right narrative. And so being able to start listening and hearing and validating the narratives that exist and then moving together in a collective way that's accepting of each side. Mm.
Michaela Sieber, this goes back to having the conversation, having the conversation with courage and empathy and without shame. A lot of intersection between your work and Sarah's work, do you think?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Sarah, listening to you, I feel like we're parallel with the work we want to do, and it's great. I'm glad that we're in this together from South Dakota. So, yeah, I see those connections for sure.
I know, and likewise. So, Michaela and I have not yet met, so it's really exciting. To meet her at the convening next month, and I'm really excited to hear more about her work and how we can work together.
Mm-hmm. And we are excited here on In the Moment to welcome you to all the folks from South Dakota and the tribal areas who are Bush Fellows. Please come back and let us know how your work is progressing and share your stories with us. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Sarah Pierce and Michaela Sieber are 2019 Bush Foundation Fellows. That announcement was made today. We'll put a link up on our website so you can see their profiles and read about the other 22 visionary leaders selected by the Bush Foundation.